This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to Rack Addicts After Hours. This is episode 21. I'm joined by our usual favourite people. We've got Pete and we have Atelmo. How are you lovely gentlemen doing?
Hello.
I'm good.
I'm feeling great. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I don't think any of us have gone insane yet. And we've got quite a juicy one for Pete and I, at least. It's Super Booth. Is it At Home or From Home edition? But we've got lots of YouTube videos appearing. Lots of manufacturers.
It's just home edition by the look of it.
Home edition. That was the one. Yeah, so manufacturers working a lot with Sonic State, actually, to bring new modules out there, sort of release videos. So you actually get a lot of stuff without the trade show background noise, which has been really nice. But first, the usual weekly update. Telmo, anything aside from your uni stuff that's been giving you joy?
Disney Plus has been giving me great joy. I think we were just mentioning just before we started. Uni work is uni work. Doing some video assignments. So if you, I'm pretty sure you don't follow me on my social media, but if you do, there will be some stuff coming out. You can always find me on Instagram, Telmo Terremoto and stuff like that.
Musical snippets that might appear?
Musical snippets, yes.
Nice.
I also had a meeting today about the making of my EP, because obviously now that we've got all the bits and bobs ready, we need to start organizing the tunes itself and, editing is done, so we need to start focusing on the soundscape. So that's also quite exciting for me, really, from musical point of view. I mentioned Disney Plus. I mean, there's plenty of good stuff in there. Star Wars, I've been digging on Star Wars, like I've mentioned last week. This week, it's been more of like the random National Geographic falling asleep kind of show, which has been proven to be very effective.
Well, there's Nat Geo on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Ah,
you should totally check that out. Yeah. All the good stuff.
I might have to.
How about you, Pete?
Oh, after last week complaining about certain retailers or not being able to get things that you could normally get locally, whereas you could get things from sort of other countries delivered, suddenly I realised the particular retailer or distributor, whatever you want to call them, had actually decided to open up, and I was able to acquire the things I was after, which are quite mundane, but it was... fencing components. I was able to get order them and have them delivered the same day.
Oh, right. Well, that's amazing.
Wonderful. So I was furiously replacing sections of my fencing, mainly in the course of stopping our little dog from escaping, which it has a tendency to do if it sees any opportunity whatsoever. It will make a run for it.
Yeah, you've already had to run after it, haven't you?
Yeah, it goes on what it most probably thinks is some great adventure, but it's we get all hysterical like we've lost a child, which is... pretty much.
What's his name again?
The dog is called Maisie.
Maisie.
It's a small. It's a.
Her name.
It's. We believe it's a Jack Russell Chihuahua cross. There is a name for that, but it eludes me at the moment. So I think it's a Jack Chow.
Jack Chihuahua.
Yeah, but yeah, it's. We've only had it for a few months. We rescued it, and it is proving to be like having a baby in the house. Can be very trying at times, but there you go. But yes, I was able to restore some of the more defective parts of the fencing on my property, which has allowed me to feel more secure about releasing the dog into the garden area.
Hopefully it doesn't start digging and literally undermine your fencing attempts.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope it doesn't sort of think it's in some sort of Second World War prison camp kind of.
start planning the escape. It was already, it's mulling it over.
The writer of Prison Break, the series himself, Maisie. Brilliant.
Shall we dig in, gentlemen?
Yes.
Super Booth from home. Pete, you've compiled a list of stuff that has interested you. I've got a few bits to add. Do you want to kick off the ALM stuff?
Yes. Going to the sort of my little list, I sort of sort of went through a lot of the videos that Sonic State were putting up, and there's obviously some things that I sort of brushed over. You think, no, boring, seen that before, nothing new there, more of the same. But yeah, there were quite a few things that did stick out, and you thought, well, that's new, that's novel, I'm quite interested. So the first one was the ALM Busy Circuit Coupe, or System Coupe, I should say, which is their first kind of complete system or aggregation of modules into their own case, using their own power supply. And anyway, some of the modules were the ones that are already available, but there were some custom design modules that are specifically for this system. But it was interesting to see a whole system built exclusively out of ALM modules in themselves.
Yeah, not something you often see. Is it all behind a single panel like the Endorphins shuttle system, or is it separate so you can kind of rip stuff out and customize it a bit?
No, they're definitely separate. They're the same models, the ones that were already pre-available. It's just that they're in this new grey livery, which is exclusive to this system.
It looks pretty swish, actually.
And it's quite a nice-looking thing. As with a lot of these complete systems from these all the various modular manufacturers, it seems to be in a trend, certainly over the last 2 years, I want to say, where maybe slightly longer. I mean, certain manufacturers like Make Noise have had complete systems for quite some time, and a few others. They're all rather expensive, you know.
Just a smidge, yeah. I know, yeah, the shuttle system I just mentioned is definitely a pricey one. Similar size as well.
Yeah, that one is I've kind of not become immune to the price. I don't sort of
fall it gets over put in perspective, because they're all this expensive now, aren't
they? Yeah, they all seem to hit that sort of you know, £2,000 to even £3,000 a go.
But they look so good.
They do look pretty cool. I'm trying to think. I'd really like to see an Instruo sort of complete system like this. I mean, he's got enough modules to do it. Whether that's something that Jason's really after with his brand, who knows? So I definitely know the Quaid Mega Slope, Pamela's new workout, the MIDI stuff, obviously a Malt, Squid Sample. What's this Milton thing? Is that an old one?
That's a CV sampler and H-Channel Audio, isn't it? The squid
sample. Yeah, I just we always like the spelling sample.
Yeah, I thought I was going mad with that, and I had to check.
No, no, it's on the panel and everything.
Yeah, it's actually on the front panel of the module itself.
Oh my God,
with that,
yes,
spelling.
Because
yeah, it was so. Whether that was some sort of mistake and they just ran with it, or that's a deliberate to sort of mind mangle you or something. I don't know what's going on there.
So is this Bosbo 2? Is that the sort of one of the bits that's unique to this system?
Let's have a look. Where was the Bosbo 2 on my list? No, that's another module altogether.
Okay.
That's at the bottom. The unique, certainly the MCO and the MCF are unique.
Okay.
And the HPO as well, I believe.
Nice.
Is potentially a unique module. I mean, you could build, I believe the individual modules are also going to be available potentially, and except you won't be to get, you'll have to have the traditional silver.
Yeah.
But you could put together this module yourself.
Really like the aesthetic, because you've got that lovely, it's quite kind of a mid-grey, the lovely pink and blue. It's quite pleasing.
Yeah.
Not this Ben, but the other Ben from the Modular Cafe does actually know the gent behind ALM Busy Circuit, so it's quite possible we'll be able to persuade him to bring the System Coupe or System Coupe down for a real life one whenever those are going to resume at some point. It'd be cool to see what you can get out of this. I mean that the squid sample, you've got a lot of possibilities, so I'm thinking you could do a lot of percussive, what's the any kind of electronic genre, so you could go techno, you do some EDM type stuff, as well as I guess you could do some pretty fun acid things. I think the only bit you'd struggle with is if you're trying to do some kind of ambient type things. Mm-hmm. There's not a massive amount of that going on, but I think it would be quite a good live case.
Yes, I mean, That's potentially what it's made from. I've actually bought modules off the gentleman directly. I can't remember his name. Because he's normally got a stand at the Brighton Modular Meet. The main one in the summer. And invariably, you can get modules from him at considerably less than retail.
I didn't actually have any money in my pocket when I went to Brighton Modular Meet a couple of years ago, which was kind of sad. I did get my Thonk discount codes, though. That's what it was all about.
Nice.
Amazing. Well, we sort of had a conversation with him, and once we realised the advantages of buying directly, we hit up the cash machine, which is on the other side of the atrium in the university. Is it the... I can't remember which university it is. It's the University of Sussex or something like that, is it?
New
not?
Hampshire?
All I remember is the Attenborough Centre is where it's normally held, but I've totally forgotten. Anyway, let's chug on to... There's the Tip Top Audio new effects that have been... They've actually been released, but there's some new videos for those. So you've got Echoes, Z-Verb or Z-Verb, and the Z5000, which is multi-effects. Those are actually sold really well for our certain retailer who's actually managed to stock them on time for once. We sold through them very quickly. And I think... Did one of our modular guys buy one? He might have done. One of the Modular Cafe people, anyway. I think he got the Z5000. But no, Tip Top Audio pulling out some their usual high quality, easy to use, and quite compact actually. For a lot of people have been making really big modules recently, which is kind of annoying. You just want to save space. And then there's this, for example, Wong have released another stereo filter, and it's massive. I just don't see why it needs to be that big for the actual functionality.
These ones seem to be very much, they did what they said on the tin, so to speak.
Absolutely.
They just seem to focus in on, I mean, what sort of money, I'm not aware of what they retail for.
Then definitely not expensive at all. Let me just find the price for you. I remember them being around about the 200 mark, but I could be totally wrong. Let's see what the internet has for us. 175 a pop. And you've got them in... I know a lot of people aren't a big fan of the new style tip-top kind of white thing, which I think it looks good, but it doesn't blend with others.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think it looks really cool. But you can get them in two colours, in two sets of colours as well, right?
Yeah, there's the black option, which will probably blend with systems a little bit better.
Yeah.
Wouldn't work with the Moth, though, Pete, because there's no silver option. Though you have circadian rhythms. That fits with your silver theme, okay?
Yeah, it kind of just about gets away with it. I try to ignore it. I'm not going to be so wedded to color when I start building my mobile module cases. There's going to be a sort of plethora of different colors. I'm going to be more concerned about functionality.
Fair.
I'm looking forward to seeing that and hearing that one when it materializes. So Pete, do you want to take us through the Omsonic stuff? You said it may well have caught your eye and your desires. Or something
more than
equally
that,
strange.
More than that. It's one of those things where I started watching the video for it, and suddenly I'm sitting up. Next minute, I was thinking, "Do I?" And I was watching this relatively late last night, so I believe the video only came out yesterday. Sort of, I'm not quite sure what time they posted it on the Sonic State website, but yes, I was watching this last night, and I was debating, "Do I email the manufacturer on Sonic now, or do I wait till the morning?" And I resisted the challenge and actually waited till the morning to email them to demand that I was either placed on to a some sort of waiting list, or could I pre-order it right now, because they stated that the first batch had been made and sold, and they're working on the second batch. And when you go on the website, it says out of stock. So this is exactly... my perception is this is exactly what I've been waiting for.
Okay.
It's one of these.
I'm looking at the main one. Take us through it. It looks interesting.
Yeah. So the gist that I got, and obviously I'll find out that they've got the bottom row of sliders. If anyone could see it, it's I don't know how many HP it is. It's about 16, 18 HP.
I've got it up on Modular Grid at the moment. And it's not telling me.
Okay.
Continue, I will find out.
Okay, so it's a blue with gold trim. So it's quite an exotic looking module, sort of color scheme wise. But functionality, As I say, they've got all the sort of sliders represent different note values for an octave.
18 HP. Sorry to interrupt.
So I was relatively close. I think I said 16 or 18.
Well, this is exactly a keyboard layout. If you look at it, you can see
it looks like a keyboard. You've got all the semitones. Mm. You've got all the along the bottom. So you've got the whole tones along the bottom, then the semitones above it. Mm. So and it is in a keyboard layout. But I also believe the sliders might have a secondary function. But the initial thing is that as you adjust the slider, it adjusts the probability of that note being sounded.
Ah,
and
cool.
Then some other parameters that go. But they go on to describe, and I think this is really sums it up. So what is it? It's not a traditional sequencer.
Sounds good already.
It's not a probability sequencer.
Oh.
It's not a random source. And it's not a chaotic source.
So it's so it tells you what it might play, but it chooses when to play it, right?
Something like that. I mean, as they go on to say, so when they sort of, it's not a traditional sequencer. It doesn't repeat itself unless you tell it to. And then it's not a probability sequencer. You don't program fixed steps for variation. It's not a random source. You don't control what it will do within limits. I mean, he described it as being, I mean, it sounds like one of those, it's very synergistical, or is that the right terminology? It's one of these things that you're going to, you know, if you can really plumb the depths, it's going to really come out with some gold.
Wow. This is brilliant.
I mean, sequences are good, but you have to work quite hard, even with quite good sequences. I've got the IntelliGel Metropolis. And it is a good, you know, it's a good solid sequencer, and it's very popular with a lot of people. In fact, I was noting it on, I quickly dipped into one of Colin Bender's live streams, and I think
he's got like four of them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He's running at least four of them.
Yeah.
And they're not exactly cheap, and they run at sort of £500-600 a pop. Mm-hmm. Mind you, this thing with the expansion is up there at sort of nearly 400. But it's one of those things. I've grasped what it is, but I'm finding it hard to describe what it is.
Right. So this is one we've all got to go and digest that video.
Demonstrate it very well. Demonstrate its functionality very well on the Sonic State presentation, which was posted yesterday.
Sorry to interrupt, Pete, but what I think of this is that if you guys know how to describe this way better than me. I don't know how to describe it, but I do know its use, and I think that's the most important thing that you can take from this product, is that by looking at the layout, obviously having the keys, you can on the fly do something that maybe not, it's very hard to do as an electronic modular synth performer or user. To play with a band in a situation where you need to follow key changes, where you need to follow chords.
Genius.
This is what it does. This is a...
Yeah,
this,
if you've got a decent handle on your chord shapes and scales and things,
performing,
then
moving sliders up and down. There you go. C major, okay. C minor, okay. Just move the third down to, you know, E flat.
Yes, and you can also lock in sort of loops and parts of loops and how many steps. So if you hear something that's really good, you can sort of almost freeze it. And then you can get that particular loop to actually repeat itself when you tell it to. And as I say, I think it's a very musical addition to a modular system. Whereas a lot of times modular isn't necessarily musical. It's more sort of sound design, experimental. I don't know, a lot of people really enjoy that sort of stuff. And yeah, I do as well. But I, as I've said many times, I do like a good tune. And I think this is sort of something that would allow me to inject interesting melodies into modular. That's what I'm thinking. But certainly
Do you reckon that would go straight in the live case then?
Yes, definitely. This is going to be for the live case. Nice. And I think potentially, I might be wrong, Ben, but I think if you haven't watched it already, when you see the video, I think you're going to be...
You think I'll want one as well?
Yeah, I think you really are going to be wanting one. I think I would be very surprised if they haven't had a lot of inquiries since that video went up. And that would be from all around the world, because if it had the effect that it did on me, I can't see that I'm in isolation. And as I always say, or said quite a few times, especially when we're, you know, working, when we're in the store, and new products come up, and if it interests me, it's going to interest a lot of people.
Yeah,
you just have really high standards.
Well, yes, but if it, I mean, there's always those things that seem to interest people, and I sort of think, no, it's not doing it at all. But this really has, I mean, my modular lust, let's say, it was pretty sort of low at the moment. There was nothing on the horizon, and I was very unexcited about anything that was coming out or anything that I didn't have already. And this has really fired it up. And as I said to you guys earlier, my modular gas is come back with a vengeance. I have to have this module. I really, and I haven't felt like this about anything. I can't remember the last time I felt really like about anything like this in the modular world.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to digging into that video then.
Unfortunately, it's the big
red. I'm all for
red,
the weird sequences.
Yes, the big red. If you look on the Omnisonic page that relates to that particular product, and it says out of stock.
Puts a sad face in you.
Yes. Yeah. And I haven't. when you actually see it, says I normally respond within an hour or sooner. So I haven't heard anything back yet. So I'm looking now. I've got another email. Would it be? No, it's not. I really am, you know, I'm just hoping that they make these in substantial batches, because I could be wrong. I just think the demand for this is going to be really good. I mean, watch the video yourselves, guys, and see what you think.
I will have to.
I'll be interesting to see what, you know, let me know what you think about this. I certainly with yourself, Ben, I'd be very surprised if you won't want to make this a part of your life.
Gotcha.
This particular product.
I will proceed with extreme caution.
Yes.
Given that I have placed a pre-order on a certain something else. That,
please mind the gap in your bank account.
Exactly. Well, I mean, certainly not expecting. There are certain things that are in the pipe that I'm sort of looking forward to, and obviously supply chains are stretched and things are delayed at the moment, and you know, I'm still holding out for my summit, but I'm not quite sure where I'm going to see that. I mean, I think the ETA we're looking at mid-June possibly, but I'm not holding out any hope. It could be a lot later than that.
Well, but you'll forget about it, and it'll be a nice surprise when it turns up.
But this I really need now. I need as soon as possible.
I'm just scratching the...
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking along, because I was thinking, I don't know if it's one of those, you know, the sort of syndrome when you sort of, you think, oh, I haven't spoken to so-and-so for a long time, and then suddenly they phone you up, or, you know, that type of scenario.
Yeah.
I was thinking over the last week or so of something exactly that did something exactly like this, that produced a sort of endless, what seemingly random but coordinated kind of output that could go on indefinitely, not repeating itself, or you could, you know, with this kind of flexibility. The approach is so unique. It's so unlike any other sequencer that I've ever come across.
It is brilliant.
Certainly within my...
It is brilliant.
I think, to me, my initial kind of gut feeling is that it's very, very similar to, having not watched the video yet, the Vomona Melodicer, which is similarly not released at the moment. That has an array of, I think it's got, has it got 12? Yeah, so it's got the faders on the front for each semitone, but that is just directly, it is a probability, and I don't think it has any kind of looping function, but that was last Superbooth that was unveiled.
Yeah, and then with the addition, and I've also you know, this is a must if you're going to get one as well, I believe, is the
expander,
the three track expander, and then you can run three simultaneous I don't know what you describe them as, so let's say sequences, and but they're completely independent.
But they all correspond to the controls that you've set.
Yes, they're well, they do independently. When you select them, then your controls are uniquely controlling that.
Oh, right, okay.
But they're still the only thing that they're comporting with is the clocking.
Nice.
So they're all clocking together, but they could be completely. So you could get some very complex melodies going. Demonstration, they actually have. I mean, I would be happy with it on its own without the expander, but in the demonstration, they have it running percussion and various instruments.
Nice. I mean,
you could certainly drive a small modular case from this with a variety of different oscillators and samplers and everything going on there. So I'm excited. I'm very excited about it.
Stay tuned to see when, not even if, just when Pete gets one, and we'll hopefully if we're going to be sticking some little sound bites and bits and pieces in between various parts of the podcast, you'll actually be able to hear some tunes made with it as well.
So I always should say, please don't watch the video, everyone out there, because you're going to want one. I need to get one first.
And you're in the queue, Pete. You're in the queue.
Well, I haven't even had a confirmation, so I don't know if there's a structured queue. I don't know if I can, as I say, these are all the questions.
I don't have a modular rack and I want one. You see what I mean? So yes. it's a beautiful, ingenious piece of kit. So
you being involved in this podcast is just a hazard for your wallet and your gear needs.
I know.
Let's jump on to the next couple of brands. So Bastl Instruments have a couple of prototypes, a MIDI looper and a stereo filter. I was saying to Pete before we started, I think it's the year of the stereo filter at Superbooth, because Wong are making one. There's, what was the other one? Apaching Panda have one. Bastl have a prototype as well. Like, everyone's going for the stereo filtering thing. Maybe after the success of Make Noise's Q-Pass and to some extent the SSF Stereo Dipole, which is actually a quad filter, which I got in touch with the people at SSF to ask if you could use all four filter cores simultaneously for when I was doing my quadraphonic show, because I was potentially going to get one of those. Didn't end up doing it in the end, but yeah, stereo filters everywhere.
So what's the thing behind a stereo filter? Sorry.
Before I forget, yeah. What's the brand? Shackmat are also doing a stereo filter. So with stereo filters, it's just going to be, there'll be a completely separate filter for the left and for the right. And in most of these ones that people are releasing, you'll have control over, because you might have just one big main frequency control in the middle for your usual sweeps.
Sure.
You then might have a spread control, so the left filter might be lower and higher, and you get these cool swirly spatial things by modulating that. Sometimes they'll have two resonant peaks that you can mess around with. Lots of cool stuff. I didn't actually watch this video. How interested should we be, Pete?
I'm not really sure, because it was a prototype. The gist I got was the way they were implementing it was that they were using, I think it was a key step, to input musical input into it, and then it would just capture that as a MIDI and then loop it and send it out as CVs into your modular. That's what it seemed to be. I didn't go too extensively, because once they sort of prototype, you think, oh, when is this actually going to be something that I can, if I'm interested, that I can actually purchase?
So yeah, of course,
potentially another year. So I mean, I can understand why manufacturers bring stuff to shows or demonstrate stuff that's in the sort of prototype stages, because they want to keep the sort of excitement going.
Of course.
Sometimes it can be frustrating, because some manufacturers sort of promise things year on year and they never really seem to arrive to market. I don't know if you guys, Ben, potentially are aware, but if it ever actually happened, was the Tom Oberheim was threatening a series of Eurorack modules, and he demonstrated them over a series of years, and I still don't believe they've actually come to market. And I'm sure that was something in the region of 5 years ago. I know that the gentleman's quite elderly, and there may be all sorts of other issues to why that hasn't happened, but they looked relatively complete, and he demonstrated them over a period of a couple of years. And then subsequently, they don't seem to have happened, unless they've slipped under the radar and just didn't notice. I have to say that there is such a plethora of modular synth equipment out there from so many different manufacturers that I find it very hard to keep up with it these days. Mm. I mean, back in the day, it was a lot easier. There was far fewer brands, and you could actually keep a handle of what was out, what was available. But now it comes so thick and fast. I mean, you know, every year there seems to be a tsunami of new products.
Definitely. What I've tended to do recently is in my rotation of sort of synth news website, so I'll go Ask Audio, Synth Anatomy, Synthtopia, and then just go on Modular Grid and sort by newest and see what people have kind of uploaded and see if there's anything interesting from the big brands.
Yeah, that seems potentially logical. I mean, it's there's something that we'll come onto later, and it's something that's been out for at least a year, and it's completely passed me by. But as soon as I sort of took the time to look at it, I suddenly realised I needed to have one.
Yeah.
You know, and it had completely eluded me to that until that point.
Yeah. Duranalog next. That was another oscillator, kind of additive, kind of not. I did watch the video, well, most of the video on this one. Quite an interesting oscillator where you've got, I think, around about five outputs where you can either have a mix, you can tap just the fundamental, you can have separately the odd and even harmonics, and you've got sort of tilt controls to show how prevalent those are in the main audio signal. So you could quite easily just go, oh, here's a square wave, here's a saw, but you can get some really nice shifting in between waves. But it didn't sound to me to be that kind of world-changing. Do you watch that video, Pete?
Yes, I watched most of it myself. I thought it was quite interesting sort of harmonically, and I thought it was relatively interesting the way that when you adjusted the harmonics within the one oscillator, that they started playing off each other, and there was some sort of strange and interesting effects. And as was commented by Nick on the video, he basically sort of pointed out that, you know, using a filter, you could really tune into some of those things and come up with some quite interesting timbres, so to speak.
Yeah, somebody in the Modular Cafe Aldershot discussion Facebook group, I need to get a new name for that. It's really crap. So they asked, what's your favourite modular synth brand by aesthetics? Of course, I said Instruo, but I really like the look of Duranalog stuff. It's quite utilitarian, but it has a really nice style. And I think they use these really small but kind of solid feeling toggle switches that IntelliGel use in some places as well. But they just look really well put together. It's quite satisfying to see that whole Duranalog only system there.
Yeah, I would say that certainly the modular manufacturers, a lot of them seem to have upped their game with the aesthetics. I mean, obviously the competition is fierce these days. And years ago, certainly at the beginning of the modular scene, some of the modules looked, you know, quite ropey, to be honest.
Yeah.
But that was the nature of it. It was very sort of...
a lot more DIY at the start.
Yeah, a lot more DIY than it is. There's still lots of DIY, but...
Even those are looking really swish.
Yeah, we all know that several DIY manufacturers have moved into production and no longer produce their DIY kits, and I could see why the DIY was a stepping stone into it, because it's a lot easier to sort of distribute small amounts of kits, and manufacturing is sort of problematic, especially when you start trying to scale it up in any shape or form. But yeah, aesthetics are really important. I know functionality is really the core of what things do, but it's the aesthetic that tends to grab your attention in a lot of cases before you sort of can home in on the details of what a particular module will do for you.
Absolutely. Do you want to take us through the supercritical synthesizer stuff?
Yes, and this is the one that really caught my eye. So their new product, which is this Neutron Flux Filter, was the one that they were sort of newly bring it to market, which was fresh for this year.
But is that another stereo filter?
I don't really remember, because my attention was completely drawn.
It is, sorry. It is absolutely the super booth of stereo filters. No, that's a bad thing. I just find it quite funny.
It is indeed, anyway. Yeah. I'm just checking the video now.
But it was the Demon Core Oscillator that really, really grabbed my attention, because it's polyphonic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is cool.
I guess, I can see there's an expander for separate control.
Yeah, I mean, when you heard it, it was pretty lush. It did sound like a pretty good, solid polyphonic synth. Sort of,
oh, and just see that voices control that has tons of LEDs around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, I have a distinct feeling I might need one because I've been looking for something that brings polyphony, you know, good solid polyphony into modular.
Or just a really juicy super saw.
Yeah, I suppose if you wanted to stack it, but it was the polyphony that really sort of caught my eye because you could have you can have some really nice chord sequences on the go. You know, that's what I'm looking for.
I think we're looking at your 2020, you know, craziness and like getting your
shopping list.
Your modular rig ready.
I've bought no modules this year, or am I lying? No, I've bought no modules this year. Thinking about it, I know that I'm making several kits, but they're all purchased in 2019. So yeah. As I said earlier, I will be buying the Sarcastic Inspiration Generator, which is the Omsomic sequencer and the expansion, and I potentially will be buying this Demon Core Oscillator.
Oh, it's cool. It's actually just got a straight MIDI in. Nice.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, the sound was... I mean, I wasn't sure what you could compare it to, but it was a really decent decent sound.
Yeah, digital, I imagine.
I have no idea. I don't really care.
It just sounded great.
It just doesn't matter. It just sounded good. It just sounded solid. And that's I have got nothing that will afford me any sort of polyphony in my current system at all.
I was just looking on the modular grid page. It says software updates via audio, which means you can just kind of pipe some audio in to change code and stuff. Just share a little anecdote from Tom Mortimer, who is sort of one of our ex-colleagues. He was having some trouble updating a Mutable Instruments module, which is another one that you'll have to just pipe audio into to get it to change whatever it's doing. And the only way he'd get it to work was actually by passing the audio stream through a wave folder first and then into the module, and it worked. No idea why, but wave folder saved his firmware update.
How on earth did he come to that conclusion?
He just loves wave folders, so he just, you know, in wave folders we trust, and went for it, and he didn't mess up his module.
He couldn't get the actual upgrade to actually work until he passed it through a wave folder.
That's the gist of it. Who knows why?
I'm trying to get my head around that, because surely if you're trying to, because I mean, I'm assuming that when you upload data like that, it's working in the similar sense to a modem, so it's like a modem squelch. It's you've converted the digital code into an audio signal, and then you, as you pass it in, the device is able to decode the do the reverse translation from...
My gut feeling is that it was since wave folding is just a form of distortion, I think he just didn't have enough volume in however he was doing it.
Could he have done the same with a VCA?
Probably. But it's still funny.
Yeah, and bizarre.
Absolutely. There are more modules. I have more modules to talk about. Okay. Bitbox Micro from 1010 Music. Has this one crossed your path, Pete?
Not the Micro. I mean, I'm aware of the Bitbox, which is the... Is it not the Eurac sampler?
So from 1010 Music, it's just smaller. So it's 16, or is it? No, it's 18 HP. So you've still got that touch interface, still got the same encoders. They've just gone and shrunk it a little bit. So that's cool. Nothing too drastic there. But
what about functionality? Has it got all the same functionality, and it's just in a physically smaller package?
It certainly has no less functionality. I haven't dug into that one that much because I'm not really that interested in the Bitbox stuff. I know you're interested in the Black Box. And personally, I'd still be interested in the Black Box.
Yeah, because the Black Box is the Bitbox and the other module, which name escapes me at this moment, combined.
The sequencer.
Yes, so it's the sequencer and sampler. So the Black Box presents a much better value proposition.
And it's tiny, really, really small.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite strange that I haven't decided to make a Black Box modular version of the Black Box. But I suppose if you've already got those two others and, you know... They're because they're actually at least the same cost each, or more expensive from what I can recall.
Yeah. Keeping it with the theme of the year of the stereo filter, the Shacmat one that I mentioned earlier is called Dual Dagger. It is a dual stereo filter. So I believe you've got high and low pass in stereo. So it seems to me to be really useful for kind of an end of chain, you know, suck out your low end, drop it back in, classic electronic music performance style things. It would be quite good in a live case, and it's pretty small at how many HP? Not many, I don't know. But it seems very small, maybe six HP, I reckon. That's pretty cool. The one that interests me more is called Bard Quartet. Again, a Shacmat modular. It is a quantizer with a little vertical chromatic keyboard of buttons, and it's a quad quantizer. It is the same HP as, same width as the ADAC system quad intuitive quantizer, but this one looks more friendly to me in terms of a menu. And given that I end up always having one of my Ornament and Crime things in quantizer mode, often two, it would be nice to have a proper quantizer and then free up Ornament and Crime to do more of its weird things. So that's the only one that I've got my eye on at the moment, but it's not exactly an urgent one or something that's, oh, I need this thing. I just like quantizers, and this one just seems nice. Good-looking thing.
Right. Well, looking from the outside perspective, as not being not even close as a nerd as you guys are, but very much enjoying and loving hearing you guys talk about this. But it seems to me like the modular world in general is drawing closer to musicality, to harmony, and wanting to join not only the atmospheric. It feels like to me like the two sides of the same coin. Musicality or tunes, as you've mentioned, Pete, and the other side, the ambient music. I think there's been like the next few years we might be expecting a massive shift in electronic modular music.
It's certainly growing, and the more popular it gets, the more people that kind of come into the, don't want to say art form, but you know, this little world, the more people are going to be wanting the more accessible musical tools, I imagine. So it could definitely go that way. There's definitely going to be a lot of people wanting sort of more purist stuff, just really high quality oscillators, filters, whatever. And there is already quite a lot of gatekeeping in the modular world, which I'll put my hands up now and say I'm kind of guilty of that as well. I like modular to be weird, and I like it to be special and with less people doing it. But if it offers people inspiration, then more power to them.
Yeah, I've always suggested that there's something about the modular thing that ticks a lot of boxes that literally does make it very addictive. So there is that. It pulls a lot of people from a lot of areas into it. I mean, there's the what it can actually do inherently in itself. I mean, there was a sort of it came in at a time when there was a lack of freshness in the synthesizer world. I mean, there were other manufacturers. I think things have picked up over the last certainly 5 years or so, maybe more. Sure. With the sort of more conventional synths, but the modular thing was fulfilling a certain role in that respect. And then, as Ben says, you've got the experimental side that's very popular. But it's also got that that collecting thing, which can be highly addictive, the whole gas thing. And I joke about it quite often, but it really ticks that box because everything is... because there are so many... modules out there, and that range and... of functionality and range of manufacturers, it just seems to I wouldn't say it was growing exponentially, but it substantially grows and continues to grow all the time. There's no abatement at all in this respect, and it's got me on several levels. As I say, I approached it, I was looking for certain sort of types of synthesis, and your choices were at that point you either resorted to trying to find old synths which were either not functioning that well or were starting to get very expensive, and a lot of manufacturers weren't really the one, you know, there was nothing on the horizon. Everything was very digital. I mean, there was obviously lots of interesting keyboards, but they didn't have that kind of they didn't kind of have that edge that you potentially want, sort of, and it's got that kind of future retro thing about it. I mean, there's just so many facets to it, and I can imagine that you know, it's pulling in devotees all the time. And I can understand Ben's sentiment. There's a kind of cultish sort of side to it, and you know, that kind of feeling that it's a very kind of
it is still seen as indie, as a some sort of like underground kind of scene.
Very underground and that type of thing. And it is to a greater part. I mean, there's still. I mean, I certainly remember years ago. You know. If anyone came around and you thought, oh, let me show you my modular system for whatever reason, and invariably they would just sort of look at it and go, what is it?
Some sort of sex joke or something?
They just had no concept of what it was. And to a degree, that was true throughout the sort of musical world, in respect to many musicians had no idea about it. It was like a subculture, but I get the impression that it's filtered out into the sort of the wider musical world as such.
Yeah, I was actually contacted somebody needed a modular synth player to perform for a commercial for TV.
There we go.
Didn't end up getting to do it because they found somebody more local, but that happened. There's got to be some modular person in an advert that's destined for the TV.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's starting to creep into mainstream now. Isn't
actually,
it?
That was a thing that Andy passed my details on. So, good guy, Andy.
Well, it's a shame you didn't get it. That would have been a good gig.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed. Oh well. We've still got some modules to chew through. Interesting ones. How many have we got, actually? Is it? No, it's just one, and then there is a synth to have a look at. One that is potentially interesting for me, though not to the degree where you want to chew the manufacturer's arm off to get your hands on these things, Pete. This is Expert Sleeper's Disting EX. If you're a modular person, you'll know the Disting is a really, really small, really powerful module. So, Telmo, this is a module that is about this wide, so it's, you know, it's tiny. It has two encoders on it and five sockets, and it can be a quantizer, a delay, a VCA, a reverb, a spatial effects. It can do basically anything you could be bothered to want, but it's always had this really small matrix of kind of LEDs for a display. So I had one and I never used it because it was impossible to use without the manual unless you spent days learning it. It was an absolute nightmare. Really good for the size and all the things it can do. Sound amazing. The guy behind it's really, really, really clever with his coding. But it was just unusable for me because of the screen. I don't really like menus that much, but they need to be accessible, and this wasn't.
Sure.
This one now has a very small screen on it that has text. Yes. But this one's basically two distings slapped together and with some more RAM and processing power. So it now runs at 96 kilohertz as a sample rate. It used to be something weird like 75, which is very odd. But it didn't really need to interface with other devices in that sort of way, so I don't think it mattered. But it's got that screen, so I reckon it will actually be navigatable and usable without digging out the manual every time you want to change from a stereo delay to a like a logic function or something. So that'll be pretty cool. It's going to be around about £350, which I think is probably a fair price for what it is, but it should be usable.
Brilliant.
At last.
Good stuff.
It's got things like 8-voice polyphonic sample playing in it now, that kind of cool stuff.
The only thing that I've ever had from them was one of their sort of MIDI to CV converters.
Oh, yeah.
And that was quite difficult to configure and get going.
That does appear to be the story with most Expert Sleeper's products, is they're really deep and, I mean, once you get them going, they'll perform their functions very, very well. But you got to get them going first.
Yeah, I eventually abandoned it and I sold that on and went for a Kenton, which was much more straightforward. And it's okay. It's not. It's it's not that accurate. There are better the I believe the Endorphins is much tighter, much more, you know, it's the clocking on that is much more accurate.
Yeah, I will keep singing the praises of the Bafaco MIDI thing, because you can DIY it. It's really simple and it just works. I recently found the method to get the tempo, the clock, to stop when you press stop on the Digitags, which I didn't have for ages, but that's all good. That's it for modules. I mean, there's probably more released, but those are the really interesting ones. The last little nugget is it's an FM synthesizer, which it's called the Kodamo Essence FM. I think I came across an early version of this ages ago on YouTube, and I won't lie, it sounded terrible. It just sounded awful, and it may have been the demo, but I just sort of wrote it off as something just not worth the time. So this is, I think, maybe a 3U rack mount unit.
Yeah.
Very, very shallow. We're talking just a few centimetres. My ears, that hurt. Just play the video at full volume. So it's a really high voice count, 6 operator, I believe, FM synth with a really nice UI, and this demo that's on the Superbooth channel actually sounds really, really nice. So it's going to be interesting to see the development. No idea when it's actually gonna turn up, but so, quite an interesting one.
Yeah, I did watch it, and I thought, well, that it did make out that programming FM, or it did look like it made programming FM quite relatively straightforward compared to how FM can be on other instruments.
Absolutely.
So it will be interesting. It doesn't look like it's going to be that cheap, looking at the makeup. I mean, I wouldn't like to hazard a guess how much that's going to be.
It looks like there's one going for £1,199. So this is pre-order price. Looking at an online retailer.
It'll be a chunk. Yeah, it's got all the built-in effects and stuff. But having that big old touchscreen right in the middle should make that what's normally a horrible programming experience a little bit better. And it looks to be that FM nerds that really, really know how to program something like a DX7 will still be able to do the super weird stuff that they might have been used to.
Yeah, I can't remember what I heard, but I heard someone giving a very good explanation of how FM synthesis works and how it should be programmed in it. It's one of those sort of situations. It all makes perfect sense at the time when you're listening to the explanation, and then latterly you sort of it all goes, you forget it.
You try and apply it and you go, but this sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of so it's I'd like a map just that you need to build, and it's very interesting. It's a completely different world within synthesis itself, isn't it?
Totally. I mean, can actually draw your own waveforms with your finger. That's really cool.
Telmo, weren't you thinking about buying a DX7 at one stage?
I was. I didn't end up getting one just because I didn't find one at the sort of price that I wanted. I've noticed that they were getting more and more expensive. I genuinely feel like I could get some software adaptations of the sounds of DX7 for way less. So that's why I'm still want to have one. I mean, it's a great piece of kit, but they're getting more expensive, unfortunately.
Yeah, it does seem to be the case they're getting more expensive. I prefer a full size one. I kind of thought about getting the Reface version because it is actually it's as good as an original in some respects, and it has all the expansion packs built into it. And there was a stage that we had a second hand one in the shop, and it was going for, I'd like to say it was going for about £150, which was a steal. But as I always say, I can't get past the mini keys. I just can't. I mean, I know the thing. I mean, I know that they're not toys, although they look like toys.
Yeah.
But me and mini keys just don't. I need a full size keyboard if I'm going to have keys. Other than that, I'd rather have a module and no keys at all.
Sure someone's hacked about the Reface series to make them modules.
So pull the guts out of it and put it in. But that'd be great in a little module. Imagine the Reface Guts in a Eurorack module or something like that with a MIDI interface. That'd be a great thing.
Would be pretty cool.
I've often thought, I mean, is there any sort of mileage in sort of getting other products which are relatively small and converting them into Eurorack as a kind of...
Yeah, I know somebody's done that with the, you know, there's those cheap Zoom multi-effect pedals which are actually quite good. I know somebody's done that before.
Well, and chuck them in a rack. Okay. Yeah,
even sort of, you know, provide, somehow fabricate a conversion kit for people. Here's your conversion kit for the such and such. I know that you can get those mounting plates for the Teenage Engineering, the pocket operators.
Yeah, those are pretty good. You can get those from Thonk.
But is there any impedance issues with connecting them to intermodular or anything like that?
Probably. I don't understand enough about electronics to comment, really.
No, I meant in respect to the audio, you know, the sort of signals and
Again,
so
probably. I know modulars, Eurorack level is really, really high. So you always need to attenuate before going to line level so you don't just distort things. I don't know the ins and outs of it too well.
I mean, the one I was thinking would be easy to do because I don't use it would be the Korg SQ1, the little step sequencer?
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking, that wouldn't be too hard to sort of pull that out of the little case and make a faceplate for it. Not sure how to. I think the problem's going to be it's powering the unit, you know, being able to sort of utilize the bus power from your modular rack and power the.
It's not too bad for USB powered stuff, though, because you've got easy access to 5 volts on most power supplies. But again, I don't know enough to not blow things up.
That's part of the joy, isn't it? Blowing things up.
Not when I've got my shiny new Instro module in there. It arrived in like a day.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. But that's digging into that and the expert firmware on Batumi. So I think the last thing we're going to be doing today is actually just giving you some more recommendations of things to dig into in your downtime in self-isolation at the moment. Pete, you've asked for recommendations from our subscription list. Did you have one ready to fire away?
Yes. Well, as I say, my YouTube subscription list is quite lengthy. It's good, possibly even 10 years of it going back. And I tend to, sometimes I go and sort of audit it a bit and sort of, there are channels that have actually disappeared completely or the content's been removed and so forth. Not that there's anything particularly wrong with the content, but for whatever reason, it's gone. But from my extensive list, it's something that I dip into regularly is, let me get it up onto the screen here. Right, so anyone who's into a bit of Second World War history, there's a gentleman called Mark Felton, and he's got a channel called Mark Felton Productions. And he does videos which can extend from, 10 to 20 minutes long, and they all feature sort of mainly World War II, but sometimes there's World War I and some occasionally pre-war history, and sometimes he goes up to even things more recently like the Falklands conflict and other stuff. He's clearly a very learned military historian, and his videos are very focused. So they will be, for instance, it will be about potentially, let's say, an individual tank within an individual battle, and you'll have all the details about everything that is sort of took place within that scenario. And he presents it in a very they are very digestible, you know, you can dip in and dip out, they're not too taxing, but the detail that he goes into. So as I say, it could be one particular mission. And there's various sort of high-level missions that are very famous. And you can say that, like the Dam Busters raid on the dropping of the atomic bombs. They're the sort of very well-known missions. And typically the history of those particular missions are well-known. But this, as I say, this could be one particular German tank in one particular Russian battle or something like that, and he'll go into extraordinary detail about exactly what happened to the crew, what happened to the tank, if there was any sort of history on that particular tank, if the tank is still in existence, you know. And although some of the bits and pieces he touches on may or may not be familiar, some of the stuff is, you know, is quite obscure, but still quite entertaining. And as I say, he does, he puts up a video at least once a week, I want to say. I mean, there's a massive array of videos going back several years.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of views on these as well.
Yes, I mean, he's got a reasonable amount of followers. But they're very well put together, and he seems to have access to a lot of historical footage, and he clearly seems to know his stuff.
Seems like a very interesting view over World War II, where sometimes, you know, there's way too much generalized views of a particular time or a particular couple of weeks, and, you know, talking about stories about people, and, you know, it really makes a difference.
Yeah, and there's no political skew to it or anything like that. He just really details the facts, and he seems to get quite a lot of, he seems to still maintain a level of interest in it. Mm. You know, sometimes I'm not really up for it, but if I'm sort of at loose end and one pops up, it's not one of those things that ages. I mean, obviously it's all historical, so it's not like certain YouTube videos when they're put out are very time orientated, in respect that if you don't watch them, they become irrelevant after a certain amount of time. Sure. Whereas, if you see one of his videos being posted, you think, well, I can always go back and look at that next week or the week, you know, or in a couple of weeks' time. There's no imperative. But if you at loose end, or if you want some time to kill, I mean, sometimes you can watch several in a row, or you can just dip in and watch one if that sort of thing interests you. And as I say, generally, he manages to make each area of investigation, or each area or each video that he puts out, makes them quite interesting. Although, you know, some of the facts and figures could be construed as quite mundane and boring. Well, I mean, wars aren't mundane; they're horrific. But yes, it's well worth a watch.
Nice one. I've just while you were telling us about your recommendation, Mark Felton, I was digging through my subscriptions because I had absolutely no idea. But I did remember one that I came across the other day while I was lusting after a Soma Labs Lyra 8. This is a channel called Datachrome. He's a musician, makes some really cool IDM, dark techno-type stuff. Just if you want some of that kind of music in your life,
nice.
Just get down. Really nicely made videos as well. He's done stuff on the Shuttle System, the Lyra 8, orthogonal devices, ER301, that kind of stuff. The channel trailer, if that doesn't sell you, then you won't like it. But I think he makes some great stuff. Datachrome, that's the guy. Telmo, your turn.
So, before I jump into any recommendations, there's just a couple of things I want to mention. First of all is news about musicians funding due to all the circumstances we're involved with the coronavirus. So the Louis Armstrong Foundation has recently just launched $1 million fund for jazz musicians in America. So this is obviously, as we know, in New York City, like a big example of freelance jazz musicians that have been affected by the coronavirus pandemic. You know, this really is helping directly these people that need to have something to eat, unfortunately. So this really is good news, and this funding is coming from institutions and private institutions, and from musical-related businesses that are directly helping. So there's a good example of people helping each other here, which is something that really touches all, because we're all performers. So this is good news, everybody. So another thing that I wanted to mention is a website that I've been using for quite a long time, and I've noticed by talking with a few friends that not everyone is aware of it. So I wanted to also mention the website Equipboard,
Equipboard,
EQUIP board.com. So It's basically the largest database of what artists use in terms of gear. So, you know, anyone from Paul McCartney to, you know, David Guetta, everyone, there's the gear that they use. You guys want to know about it. This goes for bassists, for DJs, singers, everyone. So this is quite a useful website to look at. So this is part of my stuff. In terms of videos, I have been looking at this YouTube channel called Dollars Jammin'. You probably heard of it, Ben.
What's the name? Jade? Is it Jade? Is that her name?
Jade Wee. Jade Wee?
Yeah, she's really cool.
Yeah. He's a really cool guy. Basically, what he does is that he customizes his synths. So he takes off the casing of his synth and he hand paints them, which is really interesting. I don't know if he does. Maybe, getting in touch with him, he can custom made one for you if you're interested in that. But it's really just looking at him doing it, it's very satisfying. He does it on his HESP 404. He does that on his Electron Digitag as well. So it's worth having a look at that. I think this is it from me. So
nice one. Well, once again, I hope you enjoy the stuff, various stuffs that we provide you with that you might want to dig into if you've got too much time on your hands. You don't want to be alone with your thoughts for too long. That can end badly. But hopefully you'll tune back into Rack Addicts After Hours. It'll be episode 22 next week. Have a good one. Stay safe in the changing environment outside. Have a good one. Thanks for listening. Bye now.